Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Two Hall of Fame running backs and the next foundation-shaking development in college and pro football. It is the Chuck Oliver Show on a Tuesday. How is everyone today? Hope you're having a glorious existence wherever it is you're listening to the program. We're on east, west, north, and south, everywhere around. And it's a Tuesday, so we got Dave Bartu coming up. Good friends of mine, Brian Matthews here, hour two. Going to talk a little Auburn, Richard Cross, Ole Miss. They just got themselves a national championship in baseball. So a lot to talk about. But I start the day, I say the next foundation-shaking development in college and pro football, and it includes and actually is based around and sprung from the story of two Hall of Fame running backs, at least college Hall of Fame. One of them's in Canton. The foundation-shaking development, Chuck, that's big words. Are you just trying to hook us? No. Would we agree that the transfer portal, immediate eligibility through one time through the transfer portal, we agree that's foundation-shaking for college football? That's a little hot for pro football. It actually makes their scouting maybe a little easier, maybe, in that Jermaine Johnson, I mean, you would have been evaluating him on 18 snaps a game versus like 45. So it, maybe that helps the NFL. But largely, the portal, as far as affecting play in the NFL, nah. Name, image, likeness, as far as affecting play in the NFL, nah. Foundation-shaking development in college? Holy smokes. But it's where these intersect that it includes the NFL and college. We should expect over the next couple of years the NFL to announce that players 2 years after high school graduation are eligible to be drafted, i.e. sophomores are going pro. The current system, and I think that is the wording, it's 3 years after high school graduation. So if you were held back in fourth grade or you transferred and lost a year, whatever it was. I remember when Katrina hit, there were some kids who were like, yeah, my high school graduation got delayed. So you got to be an old man in college football a little bit. But the NFL used to have a guideline that you have to be 4 years removed from your high school's graduating class to be drafted. And then the USFL, in a one-time exception that became a more-time exception, the USFL, the Renegade Breakaway League that wrecked salaries and all kinds of other stuff, brought Donald Trump to pro football. Also brought Herschel Walker to pro football after only 3 years in college, but that was after the 82 season, and it was a one-off, and not really, it was Herschel Walker, and it was different, and it was an asterisk. But it's still 4 years. And then Lorenzo White happened. If you are of a certain age, there's a chance you've never heard of Lorenzo White. Lorenzo White, Lo White, and the Seven Dwarfs. Chuck, what are you talking about? Lorenzo White was a freshman running back at Michigan State in 1984. I got to go way back because that's how the timeline is sort of set up. And Lorenzo White was a kid out of, I've talked about Dillard High School down in Fort Lauderdale. It was one of those high schools that had a pipeline to a certain college, a certain college program. And St. Thomas Aquinas had that. Valdosta had that. Permian. I mean, you look at some of the high schools that maybe you know, and there was a pipeline going on. Well, Michigan State went down to Dillard and Fort Lauderdale, and they got Lorenzo White, and he was a true freshman in 84, and he had a pretty good season. played about half the time, went for 600 yards as a freshman, caught a few passes. He was a pretty good freshman. His sophomore season was one of the greatest seasons a college running back has ever had. Do you think if you were watching a college football game today and you saw a running back have 35 carries, would that stand out to you? What if there was a college running back, a sophomore, a 19-year-old kid who played an entire season and averaged 35 carries per game? Lorenzo White, 1985, 12 games, 419 rushing attempts. And he caught some passes. 1986, another good season. 1987, his senior season. 1987, his fourth year after leaving high school, he still wasn't eligible for the NFL. So, Lorenzo, I said Low White and the Seven Drawers. Do you know why that nickname? You've never even heard it, but he was a good-sized running back, pretty thick kid. He's in the College Hall of Fame now. He's 5'11", about 215. It was Low White and the Seven Drawers. You know, you have five offensive linemen. Michigan State was like, we have a tight end, and with Lorenzo White, he's just on block. And they were like, you know what? We're going to do the same thing with a fullback. We're going to have Lorenzo White and seven blockers. And he was an absolute monster. And after 3 years of college, he still couldn't be drafted by the NFL, and the USFL had gone away. So after 3 years and being a first-team All-American and a Heisman finalist, Lorenzo White looks around East Lansing, Michigan, and you know what he says? One more year. This kid goes back to Michigan State for his fourth season as a starting running back, 357 carries for 1,500 yards, 16 touchdowns, takes Michigan State to the Rose Bowl for the first time in more than two decades. And now, finally, he's eligible for the NFL draft. And if you look at the first round in 1988, the Houston Oilers, they're the Titans now. The Houston Oilers, in the first round, took Lorenzo White, running back, Michigan State. There were two things going on there. Lorenzo White had a decent enough pro career, but he was never – you had that many carries over four pretty consistent years in college. You may have a 15-year-old son or daughter. You may be 30 years old yourself. And if you look back at Lorenzo White's numbers, you're like, why did he play so 4 years? Well, he had to play 4 years. And the next year, the other Hall of Fame running back, Barry Sanders, he stepped up. Lorenzo White's workload and what Barry Sanders went through in 1988 as a junior led Sanders to look at the NFL and say, I don't care what you say your rule is. It's restriction of trade. I'm going to play for an NFL team. I want to be eligible for the draft. And the NFL said, okay. Barry Sanders, I gave you Lorenzo White, and he had to. There was a rule in place. Nothing could be done. So he came back, played the fourth season as a running back who had already put in that kind of work. Barry Sanders, in his third season, 373 rushing attempts, 42 touchdowns, and they used him as the primary kick and punt returner. On top of that, he caught 19 passes. He looked around at what Lorenzo White had done in his fourth season for free. He looked at his own workload as a junior for free, and then he looked at the ruling that came down from the NCAA that said, hey, Oklahoma State, you've been cheating, like really, really bad you've been cheating. So you have 5 years of probation beginning right now. And Barry Sanders is like, wait a minute, I didn't do anything wrong. But now I don't get to go to a bowl next year or be on TV? Uh-uh. Because of Lorenzo White's workload, my workload, and the fact that my team's now on probation, I'm going pro. And the NFL was like, hey, keep it down, Barry. We'll let you go pro, but don't tell anybody else. He's like, hey, Deion, guess what? I'm going pro. Deion's like, really? Going pro? So now people, you can all go pro after junior year? Well, dang. And so there were four Hall of Famers picked in the first five picks in the next draft. Because in the 88 draft, it was the last year where you had four classes evenly spread out. In the 89 draft, it was the first year juniors were eligible, and future Hall of Famers like Barry Sanders is like, yeah, I've learned all I can from college football. And so it's the only year you had two full combined first-round talent pools. That's the last time there was any sort of major shift when it comes to draft eligibility. Mike Williams and Maurice Clarett, if you remember, and I believe their ages do line up, their years, their classification. Maurice Clarett was a freshman running back who helped Ohio State win a national championship. And after his sophomore year, there was an issue with a car dealership. There were payments. There was other stuff, whatever. That's his history and his personal past, and there was more gravel than asphalt, that's for sure. He was a little bit of a sketchy guy at times. But he was a great running back, and he said, I want to go to the NFL. And Mike Williams, who was at USC and a wide receiver and had only played two seasons, he's like, I want to go to the NFL too. So Maurice Clarett and Mike Williams took the same stance Barry Sanders did. We want to go pro after 2 years. And the NFL's like, sue us. We'll stare you down this time. And that's where, after that, that's where we sit. We routinely see articles come up this time of year that whatever rising junior should not play this year, spend the year training before he's eligible for the, all that stuff's going to go away. Because of name, image, likeness, and the fact that kids are pros as true freshmen anyway now. Because you have rising high school seniors agreeing to $11 million deals. Because of the transfer portal, because of so much upheaval of college football rosters anyway, and the fact that you are going to – we already do have kids who have sat out. Ja'Marr Chase, you know what he did a couple of years ago? He's like, yeah, I'm sitting – I'm opting out. It's quitting. It's already happening. And if you tell me that there was something magical that happened in Ja'Marr Chase's final year at LSU where he didn't even play, and then he wouldn't have been ready for the NFL that year, but the next year he was – no, I ain't buying that. There are players who can make it. There are players who make it happen as freshmen somehow in the NFL. And you're going to see the same thing start happening in the NFL that you saw in the NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, everything else. We're going to, and the first step is we are going to see sophomores. I've played 2 years, maybe even one on the field in college football, and now I'm eligible for the draft. Folks, that is what is coming down the pike. We're going to take a break. Continue on this Tuesday next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at AtlantaRamjack.com.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
I don't think he's operating on a level playing field with some of the other staffs you're asking them to compete against. I don't think he's operating on a level playing field as Georgia. I don't think he's operating on a level playing field as Miami. And that's got to change. Or else you better get comfortable finishing second and third and watching a lot of these recruiting battles turn at the last minute.
Hasn't coached a game yet, by the way, folks. Hasn't coached a game. Chuck Oliver Show on a Tuesday. That's our good friend Josh Pate, Late Kick Josh, the Late Kick podcast. He's part of CBS Sports HQ, all of that, with our good friend Barrett Salee and all them over there. We have Josh on regularly. He's talking about Billy Napier. Yet to coach a game in Gainesville. But I don't want to say this is like the last scene in Frankenstein, you know, the torches, the pitchforks, all that. But it's kind of like the last scene in Frankenstein right now. It is the end of June, and Florida had put many eggs in a Jaden Rashada basket, and it winds up that the guy is committed, at least at this point. He is committed to Miami, and Miami was late add. And so when you have a team that is a late add to the official visit list, when you have a program that is a late add to the Final Five, when you have a program that is a late addition to the evaluation by the recruit, to the point that the recruit announces, I was going to announce tonight, I'm putting it off for 10 days. When that happens, do you know what the impression of the late arriving program is? Boy, they're closing strong. Boy, they're pulling out all the stops. Full bore, loaded for bear, going for, in this case, Jaden Rashada. Well, okay, I'm a Florida fan. Why aren't we doing that? How did Mario Cristobal and them close so quick? They don't have anything in place now. Oh, yeah, we don't either. How did that happen? It gives the impression of outworking, of being more organized, of being more dedicated, of having a better plan or working smarter. And here's the thing. All of that, some of that may be true. There's no way that Florida's better than Miami at everything when it comes to recruiting. Right now, they're just trying to form a scorecard. All right, in the Jaden Rashada episode, how did this happen? Did they have a better plan? Were they more creative? Were they more dialed into what's important to Jaden? Did they just come with more money? Apparently, that's not the case. By the way, did it occur to anybody? And this is at the root of the Florida issues with name, image, likeness. Let's just go ahead and say that Florida is an SEC program that has learned hard the difference between intent and reality. The $11 million for Jaden Rashada. He's a quarterback who doesn't even play college football yet. He still plays high school football. In fact, he just ended it's not even a senior year. He just ended a junior year. A year from now, he still won't have played college football. $11 million. More about him in a second. UF, to this point, it appears. We're on in Gainesville. We're on in other places in Florida. Let me know, folks. KingCFB on Twitter. It appears that to this point, the first 363 days of name, image, likeness, that UF has been using it for what it's supposed to be, for their current players. Do we remember a year ago what most of us hand raised? Now, I was a little skeptical. In fact, I had Jay Billis on. David, do you remember we had Jay Billis on and I talked name, image, likeness with him? It's probably about a year and a half ago, maybe 6 months out of it actually taking place. And we had Jay Billis on, and I said, I think it's going to be the Wild West. I think it's just going to be outright buying of recruits. Even Jay, who is for free market and determine your value and everything else, and I don't want to pair because he's so bright, and Lord knows I can't give him his words, but his attitude, as I'm recalling, was let it play itself out. It won't be so bad. It'll actually probably be just good. I don't even think Jay Billis had this planned. I don't believe Jay Billis even thought about this. Whoa, wait a minute. Active players putting themselves up for bid and then taking million-dollar payouts. Well, the recruit, who's not even a player yet, doesn't even have a Biletnikoff award. If it's true, he just got $9.5 million and could have had 11. So all kinds of issues there. But a year ago, do you know what almost all of us were saying? And I was more skeptical. I was like, folks, we really, really, really like winning college football games. And I wasn't talking volleyball or anything else. Most of us were thinking it's the kid on campus who can walk into Larry's Pizza and go, hey, I'm a tight end on the football team. I'll tweet out a picture of that pizza if you'll let me have it for free. And we were thinking it would be a pair of tennis shoes or a pizza or whatever. Folks, that is not what it is. We thought that it would be players already on a roster. Players who had already chosen their school and now, hey, it's Larry's Pizza. Want to set up an arrangement where twice a week you send out a tweet and twice a week I give you either a large pizza or 10 wings and a salad and breadsticks? Whatever it is, that's what most of us were envisioning. I will say that I at least envisioned a little bit more sinister scenario, but I came way well short. I've talked about this before. Do you remember my scenario? I said, folks, I'm an Auburn grad. What I'm going to do, if not, I'm going to $5,000 to come sign autographs in my driveway. $5,000. Okay, Chuck, call Jaden Rashada. Offer him $5,000. He ain't walking across the street for $5,000. Much less sitting in my driveway for 2 hours signing autographs. Much less going to the school I want him to go to for $5,000. There is a story that I have heard for about four decades, and I don't know how true it is, and I don't honestly care, and I don't think it matters at this point. There's a story I've heard about Herschel Walker's recruitment, and I even have heard who the assistant coach was. It was an uncle, there was a bridge, there was a bag of money. It's easy to hear stories, folks. It doesn't take anything to hear stories. If you haven't heard this one, you're about to hear a story. There's an assistant coach at Georgia at the time, and it was Clemson and USC in Georgia, and so there was a paper bag, there was a relative, and it was $50,000. That's just a story. I have no idea. I'm not alleging it's even true. I'm saying I heard that story when I was in seventh grade, and I've heard it when I care enough to ask anybody. Oh, yeah, I've heard that story too. Now, here's the thing. Like I said, I originally said I don't care if it's true. I don't know if it matters if it's true. If Georgia actually got Herschel Walker for $50,000, this is the steal of the century until Auburn got Cam Newton for $180. I mean, inflation and all. And that's another thing. I really don't think Cam Newton's dad got anything. If he did, bully for him. Deal of the century. That was the realm I was thinking of to get the three-star running back from the town over was come sign autographs at Chuck's driveway for $5,000 and then choose Chuck's school. $5,000? How did you come up with that? I was like, well, if an undefeated season and a Heisman Trophy quarterback was alleged to be 180, if a Heisman Trophy running back 40 years ago was alleged to be 50, okay, I don't know. I'm doing my mouth calculators, and I'm going, all right, maybe $5,000 to sign autographs, folks, $11 million. UF had been using it for what it was supposed to be. We have a collective, and hey, look at the players who are already Gators and who have already bled a little and sweated some. We're going to reward them. That's great, and it's what you're supposed to be doing. And it doesn't help you sign the blue-chip recruit. Not the blue chip recruit who's been offered $9.5 million or $11 million or $2 million. And you look at him and say, well, yeah, but we got our starting outside linebacker $100,000 for his senior season. Senior season? I may not even have a senior season, much less on your campus. That's what we're dealing with right now. Florida, LSU had some of this. Florida learning the difference between the intent and ultimately the reality.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. To Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
It was a formality, and we presented it as such when we spoke probably 2 weeks ago. when we spoke about this. I said that the ACC, divisions are going away. And for probably five teams in the Coastal, that's really bad news. Because the only reason Georgia Tech has gone to the ACC title game ever is because they were in a Coastal division. The only reason that Duke ever made it to Charlotte was because they were in the Coastal division. I got news for you, folks. Pitt, they were in the Coastal division. I say UNC and Miami. Those are the only two Coastal programs that I would expect to – I could be wrong, folks. But I'm saying the freeway, the fast way to Charlotte, it's kind of been eliminated, folks. Miami and North Carolina, I believe that they can survive in the line them all up 1 through 14 or whatever. Line them up and we'll pick the best two. They can probably still play for an ACC title. But the other five teams in that that division, like Virginia Tech, sorry, brother. Do you know the difference between when I say the last time and the most recent time? Those aren't the same things, and we usually will interchange those things. I can tell you the most recent time, for instance, that Miami played for the title. I may be talking about the last time that a program like Duke played for the title in the ACC. Want to welcome on right now? I tell you what, coaches' lives getting easier or harder. He's a good guy to talk to. From CFB Matrix, it is Dave Bartu. Brother, how are you today?
Dude, I am good. I can always tell when June dead period hits because I can't talk to a coach for the last 3.5 weeks, and my phone starts dinging at 4 a.m. Hey, what's going on? Can we talk?
Now, why is that? Man, talk to me.
Well, it's they don't got anything to do, you know, compared to the normal workday. I think for everybody listening right now, if you've never met a coach at the Division I FBS level, you don't realize how organized you have to be with your day and how everything is scheduled, and it all has to fit, you know.
You remember Bobby Ross?
Yeah. No.
Okay, Bobby Ross was head coach at Maryland, won a natty at Georgia Tech in 1990, and then he coached the Lions.
No. Oh, sorry, I misunderstood the question. I know, I don't know Bobby, but
you know
anyways,
who he is. Okay,
I know who he is.
When he was coaching the Chargers, I forget what it was. I was like October 22nd. He starts flipping through a book, and he's like, "Oh yeah, we're going to be doing this at 4:15 on October 20th." This is like August. And that is just normal. And it's one of those things, I've told people about that before, that you talk to a lot of coaches and you can say in the middle, like on June 28th, you could go to Nick Saban right now and say, on November 7th at 3 p.m, what are you going to be doing? And he could flip ahead and go, okay, well, that's the week that we're playing this team and it's a Tuesday, so we'll be doing that. That absolutely is the case. And it's almost like when they have that extra week between conference title games and the Super Bowl, it's almost too much time. This is the time between the end of league meetings and media days and fall camp. This is the time where they actually look around and their wives are saying, you need to get out of the house.
And I mean, just, you know, to your point, even though it's dead period, right? There's no recruiting going on right now. You know, one of the guys that texted me said, hey, you got some time today? And I'm like, yeah, what? And the answer is always, what's best for you? And the response is always a specific time. So today, 3:15 Eastern, he's going to call me. And I know I got maybe 5-10 minutes, at best 15, bottom of the hour, and he's gone. And I might not talk to him again for 6 months.
Current client?
So, yeah, current client. And
just checks in whenever he wants you.
And that's the way it is. When you work for these guys, you have coaches' hours. That's really the bottom line. And coaches' hours, earliest phone calls I get, usually 3 a.m., 2:30 a.m. my time.
It's from an NFC East coach, and he doesn't care about the time change.
No. College football is even worse. You know, it's 24/7. I mean, and I realized that, you know, one day I got a call from someone one day, and it was 11:45 my time. That was 1:45 his time, and he wanted to talk about some offensive stuff that I had sent over. Like, they don't care. They don't. They're just, when they're ready, they're ready. And so when you live this, I can't imagine. A lot of people think it's maybe a little bit glamorous. Yeah, the pay is really awesome for some guys.
Oh,
right?
It's a grind. It's a grind.
Right, yeah. These guys, when I have meetings face-to-face, if there's not somebody falling asleep in the middle of the meeting, no matter how good it is or bad it is, then there's something wrong. These guys are always tired. It is a brutal mental job.
Well, I say CFB Matrix. That's how you can get him on Twitter. It is Dave Bartu. Dave, tell people what it is you do, and you're kind of giving some insight there, but you are a consultant to football folks.
Yep. Tell stories with numbers. That's ultimately what it is. And whether it's off the field, which is what we specialize in. We specialize in off-field behavior analytics for programs. We do on-field work as well. But ultimately, the goal is telling a story with numbers. And the end goal is efficiency. We are trying to make your football team more efficient. We are trying to help your football team reduce its acquisition risk. Those are the things that we do on a daily basis.
It is expensive to hire and fire, and it's getting more so because assistants have guaranteed like more than 1 year contracts and they never did and blah, blah, blah. So we know all that. Let me give you a number. Maybe you already knew this top of your head, but I didn't. If we go back just 3 years ago, okay, the fall of 18, that season, into like June of 19, the end of the academic year, the 18-19 cycle, there were 27 head coaches hired at the FBS level out of 130. There were 27 coaching changes. That's just 3 years ago, Dave. Eight of those guys have already been fired. Not resigned, not left, not health problems, not whatever. Fired after or within 3 years. Tell me about search firms, because I see all the time, 40 grand, 75 grand, 125 grand. Just walk me through some of those numbers, because somebody's not getting this right. Like a third of you aren't getting this right.
Oh, so somebody's getting it right is the guy who's getting paid, right? The guy who's getting paid to do that, because like our searches, I built an entire staff, you know, 2 through 11 with a head coach. We just charged 10 grand. You know, that's 10 guys, and I track them all down. I get the phone numbers. I set up the interviews, everything. You know, a search firm, they have their guys. And with a search firm, they actually really don't do much of a search. You know, they don't do any numbers. There's no analytics there. I've tried, and they refuse to let analytics in the door. It's kind of an oxymoron, though, with the search firm. Because what a lot of fans don't know, or listeners, everybody listening right now, is that the search firm actually doesn't go search the guys out. The guys go to the search firms. So, like, right now, this week, dead period, guess what a bunch of coaches are doing? They are actually calling the search firms to be on their list. They're the ones actively trying to engage with the search firm. So the search firm, when it comes to...
It's almost like William Morris Agency. Like, I want you to represent me and get me a part in that film.
It's nuts, man. It's nuts. And it's the coaches doing the calls. Agents don't do anything. Agents, like I said last week, agents will step in once a guy has a contract in place. Oh, I'll take care of that, Chuck. I'll take care of that. I got the contract. Good job staying in touch with the search firm. Good job with your interviews and great job getting the contract, and I'll take care of it from here. That's what a lot of it is. Most of this work is on the shoulders of the coaches. They go find their jobs. They have to interview with the search firms. They have to stay engaged with the search firms. But ultimately, it's all connectivity. You know, but from the standpoint of an AD paying for, I mean, you're right. I mean, we've seen the bills, right? $100,000, $120,000, $150,000 for a search. I placed 47 guys in college football last year, and combined, it didn't cost everybody $100,000.
One more number for you, if I can expand it. If we go back from 2013 to 20. I think the number is 183 coaching changes. It's about 23 per year. There's about 23 changes just at the FBS out of the 130 or 131, whatever it is now. There's about 24, 23 a year. Okay, so that's the numbers. More than 40% of those from 2013 to 2020 have already been fired. Again, not resigned, not quit, not Jerry Kill. I've got health problems and or like any legitimate thing outside of it. It's we hired you, and now we're firing you. 40%?
Yes, not very good success rate. Now it is a little bit throwing darts, you know, in terms of putting it together. Yeah. But where a lot of the failure is, Chuck, and this is why we do what we do, is a lot of these guys that got fired, many of them, it was their first shot. And what happens is they hire a staff too fast. They hire a lot of buddies. They hire guys that aren't very good, that maybe are a big name. They make a lot of initial mistakes. So a lot of first-time head coaches, there's a huge learning curve there. And if they don't get right, which a lot of them don't, they get run. And so it may not be so much as big of a problem as who the athletic director hired, but who the athletic director allowed the head coach to hire. And this is one of the big things that we try to work with athletic directors on, is interviewing for all 11 headsets.
You know, I don't want to interrupt you, but like you're supposed to be talking about New Mexico State or Nevada or Boise or a program outside the halves. You're talking about Dan Mullen at Florida. He didn't hire the right staff. You're talking about Brian Harsin at frickin' Auburn, who actually may have hired the right staff but couldn't get along with any coordinators who knew coaches in the South. So now he's brought down his West Coast or promoted his West Coast staff. It's square pegs sometimes, man.
Exactly. And so when we work with the athletic directors, one of the things that we try to get across is understanding not just the head coach, right? So I'm an athletic director. I'm interviewing you for the head coach position. Chuck, I want to know who your three deep is at every headset and why. See, because when you're the athletic director, you're not just hiring the head coach. When you sign that check for the head coach, guess what? You're signing it for the rest of the staff. If you're an athletic director, shouldn't you know what's coming in? But they don't. And so many of them just hire the head coach and say, well, I really like this head coach, and I trust him to hire the staff. But that's the problem, is by not understanding the entire picture of what's being created, you're hurting yourself. And so this is where, you know, one of our big jobs right now is working with first-time head coaches and getting them ready for the interview process to have a good staff and not fail. So when you look back at that 40%, you will find guy after guy after guy that it was their first time. And I guarantee if you and I sat down over some beers, pulled up the laptop and started looking at the grades of the staff, they're weak. They're bad somewhere. They're bad on offense. They're bad on defense. The coordinators weren't good. You name it. A lot of the process where these guys fail isn't because they're not good with X's and O's. It's because the staffing part of it is so difficult and so taken for granted. That's where you see a lot of failure, not necessarily in the hire by the athletic director, but in the hire of the entire staff.
This is what he does, folks. He does it for free with us for about a half hour every Tuesday, but he's got clients on Sunday and Saturdays, folks. He may even have Friday night clients. I don't know if high schools have gotten to him yet. It is Dave Bartu. Get him on Twitter at CFB Matrix. We're going to take a quick break. Come back. More of my buddy Dave next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
It's Tuesday, and we're talking with Dave Bartu. He is CFB Matrix, and it was coaches, but now it's head coaches, coordinators, assistant coaches, football ops people, players, you name it, man. if it is people movement around the sport of college football and the NFL somewhat, he is at the center of it. Get him on Twitter, at CFB Matrix. Dave, tell everybody about your sponsor, and then also if any listeners, anybody, whether it's a head coach, Border Regents, or just a fan wants to text you a question, get in touch with you, tell them how to do that too.
Well, let's start with the text line, because I got some great ones last week from your listeners.
Awesome.
We talked. I got some texts about the coaching expansion, and got something about the playoffs. And so I've had some great interactions with your listeners. But everybody listening, I do love talking college football. Whether I'm right or wrong, I just like the exchange of ideas and opinions. So hit me on the text line anytime. I will try to get back to everybody. May not be quickly. Coach's hours, baby. Yeah. May not be quickly. But just hit 971-217-8419, and I will get back to you. But sponsor, HempForPros.com, the Pro Athletes Hemp Association, all the products made for NFL alumni in sponsorship with them. Go to HempForPros.com. The number one sellers, obviously, for the NFL, former NFL players struggle the most with pain and sleep. Those are the two biggest selling products on HempForPros.com. So if you go there and use coupon code CFBMatrix, all one word, CFBMatrix, 20% off all the time at HempForPros.com.
Boom, boom, boom. Dave is not an advertiser. He gives his time, and so he gets to throw a bone, and he also was helping some old beat-up football players as well, so that's good stuff. All right. In coaching, the money can be really good, but there is a bigger list than I was expecting, Dave, where it's not just the money, not the today money, at least. Jim Mora, for instance, he's at UConn. He signed a contract. He's making $1.5 million a year. That's more than he was making last year, and he's back in coaching, blah, blah, blah. You have talked about the concept of, yeah, you can make some coin, but it's guys who want to be a head coach again. Jim Mora, Mike McIntyre, Clay Helton, Joe Moorhead, those are pretty big names. UConn, FIU, Georgia Southern, and Akron. No job is too small to at least call these days.
Right.
The guys just want to get back in and be a head coach again.
It's an itch. It's an itch. Almost all of them have it. It's rare when you get a guy that becomes a head coach and says, hey, that's not for me. I'm going to go back to being an OC or DC for the rest of my life. They all want to have another shot. They love being a head coach. They'll do anything to be the head coach. And for the most part, the pay, there's only one job I've seen where the pay was like, yeah, I'm not taking that job. It ain't worth it. I ain't getting paid enough, and I don't have enough money to even build a staff. So some guys are a little bit picky about that, but it's got to be a low-end job. But for the guy who doesn't take that job, there's another former head coach who'd be like, yeah, I'll do that, just like Connecticut, just like Akron. You know, there's guys out there that will get that done. So, you know, they have it. You and I have even talked about it before. Will Muschamp thinks he should be a head coach again. Promise you, everything he's going to do at Georgia is trying to get back on the football field as a head coach.
Continue with Dave Bartu, again, on Twitter, at CFB Matrix. We have talked about the changing landscape in Dabo's coaching room. You know, around the coaching table, it looks a lot different. I want to talk about two of those departures, and it's the two OCs, one who split for South Florida, and now Tony Elliott, who's up at Virginia. Start with Tony Elliott, because he has a blank slate as far as a head coach. What is your expectation, and what are kind of the variables you put into the machine for Tony Elliott?
Well, you know something, when you start looking at what these guys did well before, you know, so you look at Clemson from an offensive standpoint, because remember there was a time when it was Elliott and Scott were co-offensive coordinators.
Yep.
And Scott left, and South Florida is still horrible. Nothing's gotten any better there.
No.
And Clemson, the offense stayed pretty darn good. But looking forward to Virginia, so we don't know if Tony can actually coach a football game, right? He's never been a head coach. And in terms of hiring a staff, you know something? You look at the numbers, it's really hit and miss in what he did. He brought in a new offensive coordinator, Kitchings, who's never called a play before, so we got nothing on him. Loved his defensive coordinator hire. Radzinski is really good defensive coordinator. I think his first choice, correct me if I'm wrong, is he was bringing in the offensive coordinator from Air Force.
Oh, I don't recall
that.
And
that guy backed out.
Okay, I don't recall that.
I think that happened. Now, if that had happened, oh, man, that would have been sweet because that guy is graded up there. But it didn't. Okay, so the talent that Virginia has, in my opinion, coming into the season is on the defensive side of the football. Non-experienced special teams coach, nothing there. And as far as hiring the staff, you know, the offensive defensive coordinator staff, it is bottom three in the ACC in both.
Wow.
It's not a strong staff. I'm not high on. I mean, the staff at Virginia under Bronco Mendenhall was good. That was a big hit all the way across the board. If you notice, most of those guys on that staff went out and got jobs. So I think Virginia took a big step back losing Bronco with this staff.
We got about a minute left. Jeff Scott, it hasn't been good. He's 3-18, and they gave him a 2-year extension in January. Give me a flyover of what you think of Scott, because now you've got 2 years of him actually, you know, sitting at the end of the coaching table.
Right, drugs is bad. Okay, I don't get the extension side of it. You look at his 2 years; they've been brutal. Okay, I mean he is rated as the bottom head coach in the AAC. His offensive coordinator, bottom three. He brought in Shoup, really solid defensive coordinator, but there's not a lot of strength in the support staff either. Again, bottom half of the AAC or worse on the offense and defensive side of it. So don't see it turning much too soon.
That's what we get, folks. Every Tuesday, he joins us, bottom of hour one. Dave, I appreciate your time as always, brother. We will do it again in 7 days.
Thank you, sir.
At CFB Matrix on Twitter, and he gave you the text line, folks. If you got questions, yeah, you really can text Dave, and he will get back to you at some point. He says as they come in, he gets to them. So I appreciate his time. Like I said, coaching changes, assistants, head coach, players, all of that with Dave Bartu.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.